During the presidential campaign, Donald Trump often singled out one reporter, NBC's Katie Turr.
And we have massive crowds. There's something happening. They're not reporting it. Katie, you're not reporting it, Katie. But there's something happening, Katie. There's something happening, Katie.
And often thousands would shout out, Katie sucks, or she'd get hundreds of threatening tweets. She needed a security detail, while her supporters rallied around the hashtag, I'm with Turr. Her memoir of that time is called Unbelievable, My Front Row Seat to the Craziest Campaign in American History. Even conservative radio host Hugh Hewitt says of the book, it really happened that way. It was that crazy. And by the way, some of the language we'll be reminded that candidate Trump used may be offensive. Katie Turr joins us now from the NBC studios in New York. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me, Robin.
So why do you think he singled you out?
That's a good question. Part of the reason has to be because I was the first reporter assigned to cover his campaign full time, the first person to essentially take his campaign seriously. Also, you know, I wasn't a political heavyweight, so there might have been a feeling there that he could metaphorically push me around.
And there was that rocky first sit-down interview with him, July 8th, 2015. He didn't like your questions. Let's listen to a little.
You're for the Second Amendment. Do you have a gun?
I have a license to have a gun. Yes, I do.
Do you own one?
Yes, I do.
Do you use it? Gun range?
It's none of your business. It's really none of your business. I have a license to have a gun.
Gun control.
What are you talking about?
Or
you
stronger
asked me if
background.
I have a gun.
Stronger
yes,
background
I have a gun.
Checks.
Excuse me. Yes, I have a gun. And yes, I have a permit to have a gun.
Tell us what happened off camera. He claimed that NBC was going to unfairly edit it.
Yeah, you know, I was with NBC News, and NBC had just dropped the Miss Universe pageant. He stood up and started berating me, said, you will never be president. I remember thinking, why in the world would he say that? I have no desire to be the president. Why does he care if I stumbled in my questions? He said, you stumbled three times. And then he demanded that the whole thing be aired in full, because otherwise NBC would deceptively edit. I don't know why he thought that. We certainly wouldn't do that. But we did find the interview illuminating, and so we aired it unedited, 29 minutes.
Well, you know, again, you just can't help but think, why is this happening? Why is he shouting out at you? Katie hasn't even looked up once at me. And, you know, you tried several times to engage him early on.
We had this push and, I guess, a push and pull relationship. He would berate me from the stage, and then he would, behind the scenes, be friendlier, more charming, and then he would be berating again. I think he felt like if he could charm me, he could get better coverage out of me. When he realized he couldn't do that, he would go on the attack.
Look, you're not the only one that he's berating. You ask him about Charles Krauthammer, the Republican analyst who called Trump a rodeo clown. Trump mocks Krauthammer, who is in a wheelchair, calls him a guy that can't buy a pair of pants. We see your thought bubbles. You know, this can't be that this candidate is mocking somebody who has a disability. But it can be, and it is. As it's going along, not just mocking Charles Krauthammer, but insulting John McCain, a war hero, bragging about grabbing women by their body part.
Mocking a New York Times reporter.
Who also has
a disability.
Talk about that disconnect you're feeling between what you're seeing and the fact that his crowds were getting bigger and more enthusiastic.
There was a feeling among his supporters that they had tried politicians, and they didn't feel like their lives were changing all that much. Maybe America didn't look the way it had when they grew up. They didn't feel like they were being heard. They wanted to see their towns filled with people again, with young couples. They didn't want to have their patriotism in their minds mistaken for racism. They were scared about terrorism. And Donald Trump came out and he said all of the things that they might think or might say privately in their own homes. And he was unapologetic about it. And there was a feeling that if he could do that, he could bestow the ability for regular folks to do that as well. And that there was an undercurrent of racism there. Certainly Donald Trump's popularity exploded because of birtherism. And they felt like, you know, at the very least, he, even if he's terrible, even if he has no idea what he's doing, maybe he'll throw a bomb into the system and we'll see what happens next.
But you also make it pretty clear that there was something that happened to very nice people once they got into these arenas where you and the press were literally caged And there was something primitive that you got to see. I mean, you write about the very nice middle-class couple in their 40s who viciously yell at a female CNN reporter, a father who shows up with his wife and his children with a T-shirt that has the C word on it about Hillary Clinton. Things that might have been unimaginable outside these arenas. Talk about
unimaginable. Yeah, yeah. I can't imagine somebody screaming and calling me a C word or a B word walking down the street. And yet they did that. You know, Donald Trump was a crude candidate. And in his halo of crudeness, his supporters got to be crude as well. They entered this room and it was all of the social standards were shaken off. They could say racist things. They could say xenophobic things. They could say sexist things. They could be cruel if they wanted to. And there was no consequences. They walked up to a CNN reporter, as you just mentioned, and yelled, "You're not wearing enough makeup. Oh, no matter. Don't even bother putting more on because nothing will help you." Just horrible things that this man was saying to this CNN reporter as his wife stood beside him and laughed. It wasn't just wearing a T-shirt with a crude message. It was the screaming directly at a person in very personal, very, very vile ways and having no consequences for it. No other Trump supporter walked up to them and said, "You shouldn't do that." There was another rally where somebody yelled out, "Assassinate that B word about Hillary Clinton." And not a single person around him turned around and said, "You know what? That's not appropriate."
Look, we get some great behind-the-scenes insight into how these campaigns work. There was another time when, in 2015, he tweet-storms about you, says you're a third-rate reporter, incompetent, dishonest, basically a liar. And this is after you reported what everybody saw was true. He stopped a speech and came off stage during some outbursts from protesters. You used the word abruptly.
Yeah, and he took issue with that word.
Took issue with that to the extent that you're suddenly at NBC with your bosses having a sit-down phone call with the candidate Donald Trump to what? I mean, was NBC afraid? Were they making you apologize so that they could get coverage?
No, listen, I was going to continue to cover this guy. And he was demanding I apologize, which I would never do for accurate reporting and which NBC would never allow me to do, even if I wanted to. But I needed to, at the very least, try to explain to Donald Trump what my job was. So I got on the phone with him to say, "Hey, listen, this is what a journalist does. And it's not inaccurate reporting. It is the truth. And if you're running for president, it's going to get a whole lot tougher than this. If you are serious about this, and if the voters are taking you seriously, which they were, the reporters will take you seriously. And that is when it gets tough because it benefits everybody."
Huh.
He called and the first thing he wanted to do was talk about his poll numbers and whether or not I thought he had a chance. And I used that as a segue to say, you know, I do think you have a chance. I think you have a strong chance. And that's why you're going to get tough reporting.
Yeah. Sean Spicer calls you to complain about something you reported, and you tell him, "Well, Kellyanne Conway just said it." Well,
yeah. This is election night. It's before the polls started coming in. It's around 5:45. And Ali Vitale, my colleague, got a note from a source in Florida saying it doesn't look good here, and the RNC didn't help us enough in this state. And Kellyanne Conway was on TV not even a moment later saying the same thing, that she wished she had the support of the GOP. And I sent a tweet about it, just one tweet. And this shows you how micro-focused they were on every aspect of the coverage of Donald Trump. I sent one tweet and my phone rang almost immediately. It was Sean Spicer. And he was saying, "That is not true. Where did you get that information?" And they have a tendency to try to demand your sources, which we would never reveal. And I remember saying, "Ali has a source in Florida, and I just heard Kellyanne Conway say it on television. What? What do you mean?" And he hangs up the phone.
Well, and history is going to long look at exactly what happened, because you were the one saying this guy is more of a candidate than you think. And, and you had a hard time getting that message across initially.
I would get on the phone. I mean, I was like the Simpsons meme, old man yells at cloud. Just every day saying, "Guys, he's, you know, says Hillary Clinton was schlonged by Obama, or he's talking about an Alicia Machado sex tape, or this Access Hollywood tape, or he's going after Judge Curiel, or he's fighting with the Pope, or he's calling Mexicans rapists, or he's going after Kazir Khan." people did not seem to care. There was so much noise, they just tuned it out.
Well, I'm not at all a campaign correspondent, but I did cover the primaries. And I remember in Iowa at the very beginning meeting someone who, a young person, trying to decide between Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders.
Yeah.
And I thought, there's something happening here. Katie, one last question. Have you ever had a conversation with now President Donald Trump about how his heckling and threats from campaign stages endangered your life?
You know, I didn't have one directly with him. I know my bosses did, and I know other people did. I had conversations with folks in the campaign asking about it and asking if he understood it or if he cared. And I got, he was told, but he didn't care.
Katie Turr, correspondent for NBC News and an anchor for MSNBC, her new memoir of covering Donald Trump is titled Unbelievable, My Front Row Seat to the Craziest Campaign in American History. Katie, thanks so much.
Thank you very much, Robin.